I'm here today to talk to you about a study that was conducted at Morgan State University with some community-based organizations, some transitional houses for men who had been recently released from prison. Also in the audience, I want to recognize a colleague of mine, Ms. Xanthia James, who helped me with this study. Xanthia. Have to recognize if they come. The study is funded as part of my work with the Minority Male Health Project at Morgan State University. We are part of a consortium of historically black colleges and universities that include Morehouse, Bowie State College, Wilberforce, and Lincoln, working on minority male health issues. That project that's funded out of the Office of Minority Health focused mostly on building community relationships, partnerships with academic institutions to engage in problem solving. So it wasn't just about engaging in research. So when I assumed the role as the director of the project, one of the major things that I was engaged in doing is building partnerships with community organizations. We were sponsoring health events, health fairs. We were trying to make efforts to increase men's access and utilization of health care, and that's what our primary focus was. Well, in that process, I met a number of members of the community, and one particular organization that was working with ex-offenders, they were called Group Ministries, and they had several houses for men who, when they were released from prison, lived there. Well, they approached me and asked me to come to the transitional houses and to provide some health education. They said, can you come? The men meet every week. They use these weekly sessions to talk about what's going on, to help motivate them to find jobs, talk about their issues, making sure that they're checking in if they are following up with, many of them are substance abusers, so they have to participate in substance abuse treatment. Can you just come and talk? Well, when I spoke with them, I said that, you know, me coming and giving a talk during a two-hour session, I'm not sure it's going to be the most beneficial way of providing health education to this this group of men. I said, what we need to do is find out and listen to them about what they are feeling, what their issues and their concerns are. So that was sort of the background to this study. Giving you some little information about what's happening with incarcerated population, and you can look at in terms of African-American population, how they make up the total incarcerated population. African-American men are disproportionately represented among the population of incarcerated compared to their numbers in the general population. So it says African-American men have a 1 in 4 chance of being incarcerated in a lifetime. And this, one of the major issues related to this is the African-American men then come into return to the community, and they come back with the same kinds of health issues that they've acquired either before incarceration and even when they come back home. We look at the rates of incarceration across populations and see how high among the African-American population for rate of incarceration compared to the Hispanic population as well as white population. In Baltimore, we have, he said, approximately 90% of the men who are released are African-American men. Most of those who are in state prisons in the state of Maryland return to Baltimore City. Morgan State University is in Baltimore, and this population that I was working with were men primarily living in Baltimore and in a certain part of Baltimore, West Baltimore. In West Baltimore, there are a large number of men who, when they do return, that is an area that tend to live in, and that's also where the transitional houses are located. I don't know if everybody recognizes or knows, but that the federal law mandates that one population that is required to have health care is the incarcerated population. We may not have access to health care universally across the board, but the incarcerated population has mandated that they're supposed to have access to health care. But what that translates into may not really be access to quality health care. And there are distinctions between the kind of health care that they have access to based on where they are located, whether they are in federal prisons, state prisons, or in jails. And those are distinctions. Jails are the local prisons, state prisons, and federal prisons. And as I'll talk a little later, the men who, in their own voices, will tell you about the differences between jail, state prison, and federal prison. I'm I want to talk about what the study really focused on. There's some barriers to healthcare, and what we wanted to collect from the men were some of their, what their experiences were. What did they experience when they were released from prison? What did they experience while they were in prison? And once they were out in the community, not just that transition period, but once they were out in the community, what kinds of experiences they had. Now, the literature already tells us that there's barriers. So there are other studies that have been done that have identified some of these barriers. And here are some of the barriers that you can see. Lack of knowledge about navigating the system, lack of knowledge about their own health status, mental health problems. And along with mental health problems, we think of other behavioral health issues such as substance abuse, and the whole issue around poverty, homelessness, unemployment, and low education. Poverty, homelessness, low education are very high among this particular population. There's more research that's needed really to understand their access to and utilization of healthcare. Men don't utilize healthcare at the rates that women utilize healthcare. That was one of the issues around the Minority Male Health Project. Increasing their access, one, but increase their utilization. So once we have access, access doesn't automatically mean that it's used or appropriately used. So we need to look at both of those things. So once we do increase access, and more than paper access, what do we do to break down those barriers that will ensure that they will utilize healthcare appropriately? This is an exploratory study. Again, I was explaining to you how we were approached. So one of the things I wanted to do was just hear from the men. So it's an exploratory cross-sectional study that consisted of survey and focus groups. What we did was Group Ministries was the lead organization, and they had a coalition of other transitional houses that they worked with. They pulled those transitional houses together. Every group, every house, has a weekly meeting. We were allowed to have three of those weekly meetings. Well, actually four of those weekly meetings, but first three consecutive weekly meetings. We came in, and in one of the weekly meetings, we were able to collect survey data and also conduct a focus group with the men. Most of the organizational, the transitional houses have multiple houses. So in any one group, we didn't have more than 12 or 15 members. So it was perfect for us to be able to have a focus group. So for the first sessions, basically, we had collected survey data, did focus groups, and then it was followed up with on the next session. We had 2 weeks of what we called a brief intervention. Our first week, we had a peer educator, a gentleman who's been working with us, who is an ex-offender, but he's been out of prison for a number of years. He's a licensed mental health counselor. And so that is his area, but he works primarily with other ex-offenders. And he spent his session talking to the men about the issues of reentry. He literally went through a therapeutic session with the men. It was very powerful, very moving for the men. He opened doors for them to be ready to receive some health education information. He was very good at it, and I'll talk to you a little bit more later about how well received it was. He talked about the issues of the institutionalized personality and how men may, who've been in prison, when they return, may or may not feel worthy of receiving healthcare services. And also around what their expectations are, and depending on how long they've been incarcerated, how well they're able to reenter into the community so that their norms, their beliefs, and their behaviors have been shaped so much by their incarceration. The third week, we had an interactive session with a health educator, a woman who had also participated in health education sessions in the prisons, but she was working with the men. It was a straight health education 101 type session for the men. She talked about the 10 top health issues of African American men and answered their questions, and she was very frank. It was also another one of the sessions that was very well received. We also had a 45-day follow-up. So after those three sessions, 45 days, we came back and had a follow-up focus group with the men. I also want to mention at the health education session, the health educator handed out information on where to access health care. We had a partnership with one of the federally qualified health centers, Total Health Care in Baltimore, and that also recently took over the Men's Health Center that's operating in Baltimore. And they had a representative there, and what we were trying to do is, for those men who had not been enrolled in health care, our goal was to get them into one of the federal qualified health center to register for what's called PAC, primary adult care, have some level of health insurance and or health coverage, and be seen at the clinic. So at 45 days, we came back and had a follow-up focus group. We didn't survey them again. This was a focus group to get feedback, first of all, on their perceptions of or how they felt about the intervention. This wasn't an intervention that was a very detailed, theory-based intervention. It was, we felt the need to leave something with them, and we wanted to basically spend time making the men feel relaxed so that they would talk. That basically, that's what it was. But we learned a lot from that process, so it's given us some indication of what we can do in terms of a long-term intervention. So 45 days later, they came back and we spoke with them about the intervention, but we also asked, had they enrolled? We found out if they enrolled, if they had not been enrolled already, and whether or not they had seen a healthcare provider. Oh. So this is a snapshot of the participants. We had 89 male residents in the house. Most of them were African American. There were a number of men in each of the houses who were white. One who said they were other. Age range, mean age 44. It was typically an older population. Majority were single. And as not, I'm sure you expected, many of them did not have a lot of education. There were those who had high school diploma or less. So that also describes a population. Now, what I thought was really interesting, only a few said they had fair or poor health. Top five problems: hypertension, eye problems, bone, mental health problems. I'm going to jump into this one right here. This is how it looks when compared to a national sample of men who've been incarcerated. Hypertension was higher among our population than for a national sample. I'm going to get through some of the, let me jump ahead because I know my time is running out. Got carried away. Talking about my study, yes. Healthcare utilization, 84% reported seeing a healthcare provider in the past 12 months. So that was really important, though. Only 40% had health insurance. 81% had seen a health care provider. 45 out of the 89, or almost half, were able to name a provider. They gave me a name of a doctor. So that was really important. There was some correlation. These are some of the variables we looked at. The number of health problems that they actually reported, whether they visited a health care provider in the last 12 months, their reported health status, and their age and their health coverage. And so there was some associate, some correlation between some of these. These variables were plugged into logistic regression. We did a multinomial logistic regression to see what predicted their utilization of health care. And this is where I will jump into the prediction. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm going backwards. Sorry. Healthcare coverage was a predictor of healthcare utilization. Age, health status, and number of health problems did not predict healthcare coverage. So what does all of this mean? And I'll do a wrap up and I can talk and answer questions. Sorry about that. Lack of knowledge of the healthcare. What we thought was a major issue was lack of knowledge of the healthcare system. Men needed to know how to navigate the system. There was one example of a participant who said he got a referral. He was insured. He got a referral. And he went to use the referral, and he didn't know that he had to pay to the next provider. So his idea was, once I'm insured, it covers everything. And that's not the case. So what we need to spend more time is not only with working with the men to understand their reentry process, there needs to be this bridge between the community and while they're in prison. And what we did, what we were able to do, was facilitate that between the health providers and the men. And I will entertain questions at the end.
Okay, thank you.